let's do this thing.
Okay, I'm so excited. Here we go.
There she is.
Here we go. All right, I tried something a little different, so let's just feel it out, okay?
Okay.
Trey's gonna look and see if it's the right drum look before he does anything.
Woo!
At the top in motion. Second and goal to the end zone. And right on the goal line, it is caught by Hogan for the touchdown.
Here comes the onside kick. And it is grabbed with complete control by Ebner. They got one shot for the game. One play in Evans to the end zone, and it's incomplete. And the Patriots hold on for the victory.
Yes, the Patriots held on for the victory. Tom Brady threw for 303 yards and one touchdown. And the Patriots defense, which has been so maligned, historically bad in the first quarter of the season, stepped up against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with the help of Nick Folk, of course. A 19-14 win for the Pats that improves the defending Super Bowl record, champions record, to 3-2. And I'm here, this is Dan Hansis here with Greg Rosenthal and Erica Tamposi. Behind the glass, celebrating like a maniac.
It's Tamposi's world. Love the remix at the top of the show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that didn't sound good. I didn't like that, but what can I do at this point? All right, let's get into it, Greg. This was not a perfect performance by the Patriots, but the defense really did step up, especially in light of how terrible they've been and the short week and all that. The defense deserves a lot of credit, and the Bucs seem to be just out of sorts right now.
They are offensively, and I think you give Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia a kudos for their game plan. They backed up all night. They really took away the deep ball. They made Jameis be patient and work the ball slowly down the field and execute, and he really wasn't up to it. And yes, it was close at the end, and I think the Patriots offensively will really regret not putting this game away. That was really on old Tommy, who had a couple great quarters, but they were quiet in the fourth quarter. Because
a couple turnovers, too, by the way.
Going
Tamposi.
Oh, I saw them.
Oh, yeah. You know, one of them not really on Tom Brady.
Just calling it
free guy hits him in the back. But those turnovers point out what complimentary football this was, because the Bucs didn't score off of either of those turnovers. The Bucs had 160 yards going into the fourth quarter. So until late, when the Patriots offense really couldn't get anything going, the defense did the job.
Yes, the defense played very well. I was extremely and by the way, I locked this up. Thanks, by the way, guys.
Oh, yeah.
The old Zeus moves to 3-2. I'll take a Patriots lock any day of the week.
Well, it was a no-lose for me either. Either either the Patriots win or you get the lock wrong.
Yeah, but you did fall another half game behind in the lock standings. So let's be honest about that.
Let's pipe down with the lock standings. No one's even defined what a lock has to be, but that's beside the point.
Look at you. Salty. So salty. All right. So I was so disappointed in the Bucs, and I thought they played a terrible game. Jameis Winston, can you make a play, buddy? I mean, you go the whole game. He finally heats up a little bit near the end, and you can't completely blame him. And Nick Folk, you know, they have – it's a curse or something going on in Tampa with the kicker situation, missing a 31-yarder. That is outrageous to me. But so, yes, to me, the story of the game is the Patriots getting it together on defense. But the Bucs are as big a story to me that they just don't seem to have it together. Doug Martin comes back. Doug Martin, to me, looked good. And for him to come on the field, look good, and Winston to miss so many throws, to have a lot of unforced errors, to miss those field goals, I mean, it was not a cohesive effort by Tampa.
They haven't been cohesive all year offensively, and it's early, and we're seeing it with this Patriots team. These teams figure themselves out as they go, but if you're a Buccaneers fan or you're Dirk Cutter or Jameis Winston, you have to be concerned, because I've watched all four of these Buccaneers games. And uneven, this is very similar to the rest of them, where they'll have little stretches where they pop and you see all the different weapons and that gets you excited. But for the most part, it's a lot of erratic play. And Stephon Gilmore and, Malcolm Butler certainly deserves some credit for doing a good job on the back end. It was definitely a good day for the secondary. But sometimes you're right. You got to make a play. And Tom Brady, who had the worst quarter, I would say, of his season in the first quarter with an overthrow, a couple other off-target throws, was on fire for a couple quarters, second and third quarter. I mean, some of the prettiest throws you ever want to see, and that's a quarterback making a play. And ultimately, that was enough to get them the win.
And, you know, the Bucs are missing several key players, including Lavonte David. That can't be overlooked.
Two safeties, Quan Alexander. It was a night I would have expected the Patriots to score a lot more than 19.
Yeah, and the Patriots missing Gronk, who was a late scratch right before the game. I thought on the Patriots side of the ball, the Danny Amendola, is, as long as he stays healthy, he's going to continue to be a productive guy. Eight targets, eight receptions. Chris Hogan continues to be a guy. I mean, the Patriots are always going to be fine on offense. I want to see what happens next after this week. I think they did catch the Bucs in a weird place. They did not play well, and they got a little they got a little lucky, let's be honest. They got a little bit lucky that Nick Folk couldn't make a kick today. Three misses. That's a big deal.
Absolutely, but it's not like you can just add those 9 points and say, they would have won, because the Patriots played this game from ahead. For a while, I thought Belichick was going to love this. It was like the first ugly sort of game they really controlled the whole time. They did not play well with the lead in the fourth quarter, but they would have played everything differently if Folk had hit those kicks. But you mentioned Amendola. I mean, I don't know if you watched the Loose Cannon's Twitter account during this.
I don't track it too closely.
It was hot. It was on fire. I mean, there was a lot going on. I mean, a lot of Slack sent me my way of looking, just like run, you know, she was hurting. I mean, when Danny Amendola tripped that one time, I don't know.
Wow. What a special moment for the Throne of Ease. And one other thing that really jumped out to me and shows you, you know, what a bad night the Bucs had on offense. 16-7, the Patriots have a lead. They can line up and kick a 52-yard field goal or attempt a 52-yard field goal, and their kickers look good and hit, a 58-yarder a week before. They choose to punt, right. And Tony Romo, who had another excellent game, by the way. He had the best game of the night, players, coaches, announcers included. Another great game by Tony. He said they don't think they can score on them twice. Think about that. This is the Patriots defense that came into the game on pace to have the worst defense ever, and the Bucs were so poor that the Pats had enough of their chest thumping to think, we can beat these guys with our defense. That's interesting. It's an indictment of the Bucs.
And to that point of the game, it made total sense. The Bucs almost proved them wrong. You got to give the Bucs some credit for three straight long drives there in the fourth quarter, including one where Folk missed it. I also give, you know, Belichick and Brady some credit that late in the game, they're going empty. No one's in the backfield when it's clock killing time. It's third and eight. They're just throwing the ball anyways. They're not worried about incompletes. They're just trusting Tom Brady.
Yeah, I did. I think, you know what? When you got Tom Brady, you could do those things. Not many teams can. All right. So that's it for the Thursday night football game. We have so much more to get to. So let's get connected with Mark Sessler and start the Week 5 preview. We roll on.
Yeah, baby!
The Around the NFL podcast knows where the hot dogs are kept.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with some heroes, Mark Sessler and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, hey, hey.
Hi, hi, hi.
Really, Colleen.
That was catchy from Greg. That could be a new kind of stand-in for Wes.
Can I hear it again?
Hey, hey, hey.
Not bad.
It's what I think of when I think of Greg.
Do you want to make that the official substitute reading from Wes out?
We miss Christopher Wesseling in countless ways, and that's one of them.
That's true. Mark was pounding the table for you a little bit there. I was not.
I'm just saying, I thought it fits Greg. You did a good job with it. It's a sound drop that makes me think of sort of Greg-esque things.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there. I'm reading between the lines there. This is the Week 5 preview episode, sponsored, of course, and presented by Head & Shoulders. You heard at the top of the show our recap of Patriots at Bucks, but we got a lot more to get to. Although this is, I shouldn't say that. I was going to say this is the first week with teams on bye, but Hurricane stuff led to the Dolphins and the Bucks and two other teams having byes. Is that correct?
They were the only.
Or were they
two.
Playing
just
each other? It feels like a long time ago already. So those, yeah, those two teams had the week one bye. But this week, the Falcons, Broncos, Saints, and Redskins all on bye. So fewer games to get to, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be a lesser effort, Greg. We are, and it might be to the contrary. In fact,
that would be a strange reaction if we
take our foot off the pedal.
Two less games. Let's not really care this week.
And, you know, just everybody, I want everybody, like, I want to say at the top of the show, just to keep, I'm not going to say keep an eye, because you can't, but keep an ear out for Tamposi. She's very fired up with the Cam Newton controversy and general, like, she, you know, a lot of aggression toward us. I thought it was misguided a little bit before the show. I want to see if it carries over when the old tape's rolling. How you doing, Liz Gannon?
Doing good.
Yeah?
Doing great.
We are big time supporters of you and all women in sports media.
Yes.
Okay.
Totally.
Just making that clear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's cool. Don't be a man about it and get all emotional. It wasn't at you. It's at Cam Newton.
Yeah.
Way to make it about you.
This is what I was talking about. I just try to talk to Erica, and then I walk into these traps. I got no way out.
It checks out on some level, but let's forge on.
Anyway, so we got the loose cannon behind the glass. We're happy to have her, and we have a lot to get to. So why don't we get into the games? No need to mess around any further. And let's start, gentlemen. Am I forgetting anything? I feel like I'm forgetting something, but I'm not.
Do you want to play the Cam Newton thing?
No, we're going to get to that. We'll get to that when we talk Panthers. But let's start. Let's get going.
Oh, Mark had a newborn daughter. Congratulations.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations. Isabel Rose.
That's exactly Sessler. Right. Thank you.
Wow. You got to shut that thing down, Mark.
Wait, really?
No. I was just trying to.
Oh, my God. I was like.
I wasn't going to announce it on this show. I didn't think it was, you know, big enough to make the rundown, but Dan's shoved it into the lineups.
And by the way, now there will be an Isabel Rose Sessler Twitter handle out there.
We'll get some
about
pictures.
24 hours, so I'm excited about that. Okay. Yeah, let's get into the games, and we'll start. With sneaky, one of my favorite games of the week, Greg Rosenthal. The Buffalo Bills, 3-1, first place, alone in first place in the AFC East. And now they go on the road to face a 1-3 team. So you're thinking to yourself, whoa, things are looking good for the Bills. Not only are they in first place, they get to play a 1-3 team. But I'll tell you what, Greg, I'm going to let you set this up. But I got feelings on this. I'm not ready to count out Cincinnati, and I feel like they have a really good chance this week.
Well, I already feel like I'm getting in the way of your love for this game. If it's not, I don't think it's too late for you to claim this game as the one you watch on Sunday morning. I don't feel like there's going to be a lot
of... You guys mind?
I don't think there's a lot of competition on Bills-Bengals as the hot game of the week.
Well, I here's the thing. Watching the Bills this week, but not only this week, every week, one of the best coach teams in the NFL.
Yeah.
And everyone, and Sean McVay, I get it, is a rock star at this point in time in the NFL season. But Sean McDermott's getting a little overlooked. I love what he's done with this Bills team up till now.
Well, he's going to have to figure out how to score some points in this game. The Bengals defense has been solid, third in the league in points allowed. No Jordan Matthews. You think, okay, yeah, he's a solid receiver, but he is very valuable to them because they don't have any other wide receivers.
Right.
Zay Jones has been targeted 17 times this year with 4 catches. That is ridiculous. Tyrod Taylor is already second to last in the NFL in attempts, so this is a team that just doesn't throw the ball much, but you got to somewhat. And Charles Clay is having an okay season, but you really don't have much else, and it's going to be hard to generate offense.
It's fair to look at what happened in that Falcons game, and I don't even know if we dug into this on Sunday night, but Matt Ryan had a pass that clearly was forward motion. He was finishing it. The ball squirted out of his hands, though, at one point, and they called it a fumble, and the Bills took it in for a touchdown. They would not have won that game had they correctly called that. That said, the Bills, to me, how about this Eddie Yarborough guy? They're getting guys like Micah Hyde involved. It's just Sean McDermott doing what he did in Carolina, which is taking role players and players that weren't necessarily stars and making them incredibly productive on defense. This is a lot of the same parts that Rex Ryan had generated to create a completely confused roster. These guys are playing, and they're talking about this defense as easier, simpler to learn, and it shows.
I think this is a tough game for Buffalo. If they win, they'll definitely have my respect, and I'll be buying in a little bit. But I have to say, I'm excited about this Bill Lazor era in Cincinnati. They're up like 75 yards a game since he's taken over. They're scoring 28 points a game, almost averaging. Andy Dalton looks like a much different quarterback now. And I think when you factor in their defense with an improved Dalton, and there's still Tyler Eifert's always hurt now, but there's still pieces in place. Joe Mixon hasn't really broken out yet. I think this team could get hot, and I think we're going to see it this week. That's why I'm taking Cincinnati.
I like Cincinnati to win, too. I don't feel that much differently about the Bengals right now than I did before the season. You look at their Football Outsiders numbers, which I like the way they do their efficiency. They're 19th in the league. That sounds about right. That's ahead of teams like Dallas, New England, Oakland. I think they're a fine team. I think they do get a win.
I'm going Bills.
All right, let's move on. Next up, here it is, Mark. One of these days, one of these years, this will be a game that other people or anybody is looking forward to. We're just not there yet. It's just the truth of the matter.
We're not even close to be there.
The New York Jets, you have to go back to like 1986 for people to be plugged into this matchup. But the New York Jets are 2-2, a surprise 2-2, and they travel now to Cleveland to face the Browns. And, Mark, we've talked about the Browns' struggles. Let's zero in here and focus on DeShone Kizer. I know he doesn't have the supporting cast. I know there's a lot of issues that he has no control of, but looking past that, do you see a guy that should be on the field right now and is growing, or is he going in the wrong direction in your opinion right now?
Well, I don't see another option on the roster, so let's start there. I think he's the guy that you got to ride out this season before you head into another critical draft. I'm not sure what that even means at this point for the Cleveland Browns, but look, Kizer, I still think that you see moments in games where he does things very well and it gives you little moments of hope, but I can't assess some of his play when this is a team that we thought would run the ball with Isaiah Crowell. The only player I can identify on offense that's of any help to DeShone Kizer is Duke Johnson.
He's their number one option on offense.
What's number two? Because Kenny Britt he'll give you two good plays a game, and then he essentially takes the rest of the game off, and they are just signing receivers off the street to fill in the blanks at this point.
On the Jets' side of the ball, and this is the point I was going to make on Sunday, so I'll make it now. So,
has been a nice long tease. I'm waiting.
It's been cooking in the oven.
I've been luxuriating in this tease for 4 days waiting for this.
I've been basting Greg like a turkey, getting him ready for my
marinating Jets Greg here. In the Jets hot take.
Not a hot take, but just more a general, you know, viewpoint on what's been going on with this team. So they did unload everybody. They got rid of everybody that had a name brand in the offseason, and that's what led to the talk that they were going to be potentially historically bad. But then you look at, like, then you take a look at it. Sheldon Richardson, Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker, David Harris, Nick Mangold, Fitzmagic, Geno Smith. I'm sure I'm missing people,
Darrell
too.
Revis.
Darrell Revis, of
course.
Your
point is dead on.
All those guys that they lost, they have not been either in the league or thrived where they've went. And then you look on the other side of it. Our boy, Big Mac, has not done a bad job here. Josh McCown has been steady for the most part. Coney Ealy had four batted down passes last week in the Jets' win against Jacksonville and has been active. Not a game-changing guy, but a nice addition for a guy that the Pats gave up on and cost him a second-round pick. Terrence Brooks is a guy that...
They moved back.
Okay, they moved back, but, you know, it was not a successful move by the Patriots.
No, it was a bad job.
Terrence Brooks is a safety that they got in a trade for Dexter McDougal before the season started. He was player of the week last year with two picks. Jermaine Kearse has stepped in and been a nice part of their offense. So
Claiborne's been a really good
signing. Bo Claiborne has been a great one-year signing, and he's probably going to leverage that into a big contract. I don't know if that big contract's going to be worth it, whoever gives it to him, including maybe the Jets. My point is that the reason they're not so terrible is all those guys they purge weren't really guys that could help them, and he's brought in guys quietly that are doing a nice job, and that's how you got to 2-2.
It's a great point, and the way we talked about these two teams before the season, it's obvious. We thought, if anything, this would be a body switch game where it would be the Browns who would be 2-2 with a lot of front office moves that would have us buzzing, and, you know, young players playing above their heads, and that the Jets would be this team that's impossible to watch. You go watch every single team in the league. The Cleveland Browns right now are the one club that does not look like they are organized like a professional football team. They are hard to watch on both sides of the ball. It's not fair to the fans.
There's nothing to hold on to. They are 30th in the league in offense, 30th in defense, and 30th in special teams on football. So it's like there's nothing to just grab a hold of and feel like, okay, that's what we have.
All right, moving on. Okay, so let's talk about the Panthers.
That said, I think the Browns will win the just find a way.
You think so?
Just that's the karma of things.
I don't.
You got to win a game.
I do not, and that's why I am locking up the Jets.
Is that a reverse jinx lockup?
Wait, we were moving
on. I'm not
on.
Trying to jinx anything.
You had that whole segment to lock a team up.
I did it my own way.
I locked my own way. All right, before we get into Panthers lines, let's address Cam Newton first. I'm sure you heard of it, in case you didn't. Here is what the comment that Cam made during an otherwise mundane midseason press conference. Let's listen to it.
I know you take a lot of pride in seeing your receivers play well. Devin Funchess has seemed to really embrace the physicality of his routes and making getting those extra yards. Does that give you a little bit of an enjoyment to see him kind of truck-sticking people out there?
It's funny to hear a female talk about routes. Like,
I can't. All right, so that's what he said. I can't. But, here's the thing that I'm the most surprised about, and we talked about this a little bit before the show. Like, in a news conference, there's no adrenaline. There's no reason why you would – there's no excuse for that type of comment no matter what's going on with you. But the fact that, like, it showed a basic lack of common sense, like, to let that slip out of your mouth, it just showed to me – and Wes and I had been kind of talked about Cam, and Wes famously is called – Cam Newton a preening schmo, and I know now there's a lot of people that are saying, well, you should separate Cam from the past and the people that have criticized him in the past from this incident where he deserves to be criticized. In my opinion, this has always been part of the Cam Newton experience, which is he could be a knucklehead sometimes, and sometimes he does things. I never let him – I wasn't one of the people that let him off the hook for the Super Bowl 50 press conference. I know a lot of people did. Some of his other behavior throughout the years. This, to me, is just a continuation of what's been an issue with Cam Newton and some of his behavior. That's just my take.
You know, I'll never forget back in 1990 as a rabid young sports fan when – the Lisa Olsen incident occurred. She was a Boston Herald writer who went into the Patriots locker room covering the Patriots and was harassed by Patriots players and wound up suing the team. And they talked about that as they call a watershed moment for sports writers in general, for females covering sports, that we had crossed the Rubicon.
It was for that particular Patriots ownership too, which handled it so poorly.
They handled it terribly. The league did what they could at that point. They did not necessarily handle it great either. 27 years later, nothing's changed. Nothing's changed.
Well, I think some things have changed in that the second that Cam Newton makes a comment like this, he pays for it. And that's the thing where, look, he lost a sponsorship over it. He's getting – he's paying for it. He's paying a price for it. Like, he's learning a quick lesson. I think the difference now maybe between 1990 and then is that sort of thing will happen.
Yeah, the only thing I'd say is that I think people now are trained – to know that you must respond in a certain way to that incident, where before it was not the same world. And I wonder how many people quietly agree with Cam Newton, whether or not they say something verbally.
It's one of the things that I've learned having worked at the NFL for 7 years and having worked with a lot of like talented women. Our girl Erica behind the glass is one of them. Colleen, Lindsay, all these different people we've worked with over the years. When you get close enough to them, and you get an up-close view of the shit that women that work in the sports industry have to deal with from sexist men and people that just don't view at the end of the day that a woman should be asking a question about routes. Like, the fact that I sent out some tweets yesterday just, you know, going after Cam on it, like a lot of people did. And then there were people coming out of the woodwork, like, you know, saying that, you know, oh, yeah, you're too sensitive, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's out there. It's still there. It's Greg's right. It's still something where
it's still there 100%. It's somehow more accepted
right.
and out there than racial talk. I mean, it's different. I mean, you were fired up about it, Eric. Erica, you came in here with a lot of comments. Like, it certainly rubbed you the wrong way, right? That, like, seeing someone in your industry talk like that.
It's just so common that's why it's so frustrating, is that we as female in any industry, and especially
right.
sports, you know, and in any situation, that this is stuff that we deal with all the time, that someone on a public platform can stand up there and be like, oh, it's funny to hear you talk about routes. And it's like, you've had a few good games, but you've had a ton of bad ones too, Cam. Like, maybe you should focus on your routes. Like, just because someone else has their research done, and it just it blows my mind that it happens so often, and that's why it's so upsetting.
The reporter, by the way, was Jordan Rodriguez. I hope
who is right. Like a author weekly of tape study pieces that we looked. David Ely and I were looking at one on the Panthers. Like, by the way, she knows exactly what she's talking about. So enough with this.
And here's the good news. Like Greg said, there is the progress is that there is an instant outcry when someone is an idiot like this. I got a statement to read. This went all the way to the yogurt industry, folks. Danone Corp. Let's get some missive music. We are shocked and disheartened at the behavior and comments of Cam Newton towards Jordan Rodriguez, which we perceive as sexist and disparaging to all women. It is entirely inconsistent with our commitment to fostering equality and inclusion in every workplace. It's simply not okay to belittle anyone based on gender. We have shared our concerns with Cam and will no longer work with him. So, Cam loses his yogurt sponsorship.
Which is a huge deal, by the
way. That's a big deal.
Not only is it a lot of money, but not many NFL players cross over. That's like the goal. Like, that's part of the reason why Cam, who is beloved for his work with kids and kids love him, and he has a show on Nickelodeon. Like, that's part of the reason he does stuff like that, is to get, you know, to have that crossover appeal. And he just got banged for it in a big spot.
He killed himself with this, and it's going to stick with him the rest of his career. And quite frankly, it's hard to feel sorry for him. Okay, let's move on now and talk about the game. So the Panthers, 3-1, tied for first in the NFC South, and now they travel to Detroit to face the Lions, also 3-1, coming off that really nice win over the Vikings, where they got the stop they needed at the end of the game. Greg, your thoughts on this matchup? Which team has impressed you more when you've been studying the tape this season?
The Panthers have impressed me more. I like both of these teams, and Lions fans think we're not giving them enough credit. They're 3-1. They're one of many teams that have been close in almost every game. But the difference is, I think the Panthers can be really good on both sides of the ball. The Lions, I think Greg Robinson is going to cost them a win one of these weeks. Hmm. And this is a week where it makes sense. You're going up against Julius Peppers and Mario Addison and Kaywan Short, who are all playing well. The Panthers' offense, to me, hasn't looked as bad, and Cam Newton, as their reputation throughout the year. I think they're kind of slowly getting it together. Whereas the Lions, like last week, like their offense has not looked great, I would say, in back-to-back weeks. It's a little more conservative. You'd like to see Matthew Stafford go down the field a little bit more than he has been.
I'm with you. I mean, I thought, as much as Greg Robinson, Ricky Wagner was victimized last week by the Vikings. They almost lost that game. It's a different type of Lions offense to some degree. I mean, Amir Abdullah, I think the positive, he's running the ball well.
He's coming.
Nearly crossed that 100-yard threshold, which I think they've not done in 56 straight games,
right,
which is outrageous. The next team, I think, is the Ravens at 15 or something. But you're watching Matthew Stafford last week, and I get it because it's against the Vikings defense, but checking down into the run. I mean, often. Like, they are running the ball to a higher percentage than they have. They're almost like to the percentage of last year's Cowboys. They're crawling into that space to some degree.
And the Lions, to your point, Mark, like, Abdul has been a big part. He's not having a big-time season, but he's coming along. They've ranked, I think, 30th, 32nd, and 28th, something like that, the last three seasons running the football. And you got to have some type of balance. So if Abdul can stay healthy, that gives him that balance. And then on the other side of the ball, they are doing a great job. And I don't know if this is sustainable. So, like, I should have had them lower now that I'm thinking. I had them like 18 in our little power poll thing. It definitely
in a better position.
I should have had them in a better position, probably in the 10 to 12 range if I could do it again, but I can't. That's gone, Mark.
You can't.
I got to give up the ghost.
You cannot.
But I can tell you, the fact that they've been so opportunistic, they have a +9 turnover differential, and they have 47 points off turnovers, which is tied for the most in the league. And almost half their points have come off turnovers this season. The question is, are they going to regress? Is that something they can keep up? I don't know if they can. That's my only concern there.
Yeah, they're having people emerge, though. Glover Quinn is kind of been a forgotten guy on that defense, but is maybe the key to it in the back end, has been playing well. Anthony Zettel, who I talked about early in the season, continues to perform. So they are more of a balanced team, and they can run the ball, unlike the Panthers, who want to be a running team, and it was maybe slowly coming around, but they really haven't been a running team yet. And Christian McCaffrey, especially, not really been a good running back so far. He's been a good player in the passing game, but he's under 3 yards per carry. Like, they're starting almost to reduce his role in the running game, which is interesting.
Yeah, he's almost extremely pass run. On the Panthers side, to Jordan's point, Devin Funchess, who I think I wrote a a making the leap type piece about it during one lazy summer day years ago, thinking this guy's going to finally like have this monster season, and it never materialized. He's starting to be used more and more each week, and
he's only 23 years old. Feels right. Like he's been in the league a while. He's only 23 years
they
old.
They were counting on this before. This is good that they're getting
it's a good
this.
Game. If you win this, Lions, you'll get plenty of love.
I'm always surprised by how often the Making the Leap series comes up on this podcast. But now I think about it, when you take a step back, it's like, if you wrote a Making the Peace Leap about Devin Funchess 2 or 3 years ago, and then he breaks out, on some way it validates your piece, even though you kind of didn't get it right. You could say, like, I didn't know it was in him this whole time. So I think that's why it comes up.
It's a very self-serving series if you wanted it to. And then you just simply, you know, if you don't have to magnify the ones that went completely south off a cliff.
Right.
Let's move on. The San Francisco 49ers winless and 3 straight narrow losses. They now travel to Indianapolis and they get the Colts, who, you know, they beat Cleveland at home at week 3. In week 4, things are looking okay against Seattle on the road. They're looking very good for the Colts at halftime. And then the wheels came off and they lost 46-18. Andrew Luck is practicing in a limited capacity, but it doesn't sound like he's anywhere close to coming back yet. So it's more Jake Brisket. Mark, your thoughts on this game? We don't have to dig in too deep here, let's be honest.
I mean, it's a bit of a strange game. I think it's good for the Colts that when they do get Andrew Luck back, that this week they're getting, it sounds like, Ryan Kelly, their center back, and you're starting to see these pieces come into place. My question with the Titans, Jaguars, and Bengals up after this week, will it be too little too late when they finally do get Luck? I like this 49ers.
Is that a tough schedule, though? Titans, Jaguars, Bengals?
Well, if you drop two of those, that's your division right there.
This is sort of a must-win, isn't it?
I think they have to, and I think it's a game they can win. But the thing about the 49ers, I know they're 0-4, and if you don't want to watch them at all, you could just dismiss them entirely. But I like what's happening with their defense in areas. They get pressure, and Brian Hoyer is holding that team back with his mistakes.
Yes.
But I do believe that the 49ers are going to win 1 or 2 games with their defense. Solomon Thomas had his first sack. This would be it. And I just think it's kind of it's a weird game for the Colts, and if they lose this one, their season is in deep trouble.
Frank Gore needs, I think, just 3 or 4 yards to pass Eric Dickerson.
4.
Number 7 all time.
This is the Gore Bowl.
Yeah.
Niners, Colts.
Yeah. The Niners reporters, who all clearly love Frank Gore, were just loving writing big features about him and getting Jim Harbaugh to speak. I mean, you listen to Gore talk, and he can break down the 49ers team right now better than anyone. And I got it talking to him. Like, no one loves football more than Gore. Like, he just seems like he's obsessed with the game, and he's still that way.
The last 3 49ers losses have been by a total of 8 points. But if they don't win this game, I'm just looking at their schedule. They're done, but I'm just talking about, let's get some wins, boys. At Washington, home to Dallas, at Philadelphia to close out their first half schedule. They might go into the second half
winless
if they
don't win
here.
We're seeing the limits of Kyle Shanahan. I mean, Kyle Shanahan can help you to a point, and he is, but Aldrick Robinson's still their number 2 receiver, and Brian Hoyer's still their quarterback.
Yeah, what's the limits of their offensive roster, too?
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. Right, that's all I mean.
Let's move on. The Tennessee Titans, 2-2, sit down. Be humble after a harrowing loss in Houston. I mean, I feel like harrowing is a good way to put that when you get a 50-burger dropped on you. Damn it, nearly a 60-burger. Now they travel to Miami to face the Dolphins, who are a mess, let's face it. So if you're the Titans and you're licking your wounds after that and your quarterback has a bum hamstring and you're hoping that he's going to be able to play and be effective, you got a team that's either a great matchup to get the Dolphins now because they've been playing so poorly the last 2 weeks, or you look at it where the Dolphins, Greg, are not as bad as they have indicated these last 2 weeks, and you could be in trouble if you're Tennessee.
Well, they haven't been home for more than a month. So if you're a Dolphins fan that wants to pin your hopes on some sort of turnaround, you have the 1-4 start last year, and you have the fact that they literally, I think, have only been home for a couple days in 5 or 6 weeks. So maybe that stabilizes things. And maybe when you play the Titans, even if Marcus Mariota is out there and we're not sure yet whether he can play on his hamstring, he's not going to be moving. They basically said that he would have to play from the pocket. And movement has been a huge part of their offense and his really effectiveness this year. He struggled to start last week. And Matt Castle, if you want to see the worst 25 minutes of the game of the season by any quarterback, that was Matt Castle last
week.
That's
tough for you to say. That's your guy.
I mean, this is two
was your guy.
Two of my – Castle was one Wes always would just say was my guy.
Well, I'm just playing that
role
now.
These are two quarterbacks at the very bottom. Cutler's found a quarterback he's better than.
Well,
it's hard right now.
Cutler, I mean, honestly, in terms of a downfield passing game, has really only been better than Joe Flacco. Cutler's been astonishingly bad. You made the point that he looked up at that announcing booth that he would have been a part of in London, probably thinking, would that have been an easier situation than this? He's answering questions about while he's out wide on a wildcat play, looking like he's taking a nap standing up. It's not a good situation
for the
Dolphins.
They've all looked bad, though. They've barely been on the field. If ever there's a matchup to get right, though, this is it. The Titans, who, you know, you if you
so
want
even you stumbled over
that,
the word.
That was
It's not feeling right anymore, is it?
I was going to say, if you wanted to use that other insulting nickname.
It's not the F word, dude.
The secondary and their defense would be a reason to get after them. They're 31st in the league in points allowed. Their cornerbacks were among the worst in the league last year.
Adoree Jackson, you know, come back to us.
So they replaced them.
That last week?
They replaced them, and it's LaShawn Sims and McCain and Jackson. It's like this. If the Dolphins can't throw on this team, they can't throw on it.
I think Jay Ajayi gets right this week.
Get healthy type of game. And then suddenly the Dolphins are 2-2, and it's like nothing ever happened. That's your nightmare.
That's definitely not my nightmare.
You dolphin hater.
Can I be? Well,
you're not a dolphin lover.
I'm not worried about the Dolphins. Put it that way.
Whoa. I've seen like sneaky heat between you and Handsome Hank every time you've met in the hallways.
Sneaky.
Well, you're friends, so it wouldn't be, you know, you're not enemies.
It's always a little hot during football season. It's Dolphins fans and Jets fans. They don't like each other. That's it.
Right.
That you should know this. You're from the region.
I mean,
the
I can get along with Dave Damashek, a Steelers fan.
Yeah, but your team's not even really like a real team.
He simply doesn't even respect
though.
The rivalry. So,
you know what I mean, though? Like, when's the last time the Browns were a real team?
How am I supposed to take that? You're acting like your 2-2 Jets are going to take the AFC East, please.
Definitely not. Definitely not. Listen, don't lure me into your spider web.
Boys.
Yeah? Okay.
Settle.
Sorry, Mom.
Thank you.
By the way, anybody miss Chris Berman? When you said Castle, for some reason, if Chris Berman was here when you brought out Castle back, he'd go Hendrick back, and castles made of sand fall into the sea eventually. Back after this.
If I missed him, you filled that need right there, and then I'll not think about him again.
It's just weird. He is gone for the first time in our lifetime. That's all.
We need. Yeah.
Nobody's talking about it. And
right.
He was somehow overshadowed by Tom Petty this week.
I don't understand. What do you mean?
Did
Chris Berman die?
The absence of Chris Berman in our lives was continually overshadowed by something on a weekly basis.
So maybe next week Chris Berman's absence will pop up. Okay, moving.
I like the guy. I don't know where I'm going with this.
It's a bad job by the Titans to have Matt Castle in this position, by the way.
And also, Titans fans, if you go and beat Jay Cutler on the road, stay out of my mentions. You know, get a big win. He just had 57 dropped on. It's going to take a few weeks now for me to even consider.
Game was the greatest thing that's ever happened to you on our show. You like that they're back in their position.
They are so back in the old Zeuser's doghouse, and I love it.
I love that we're like 35 minutes into the show and have gone over three low wattage games.
Let's move on. The Los Angeles Chargers. How about this? Let's turn the wattage up. The 0-4 Chargers travel to the Meadowlands to face the 0-4 Giants. Somebody's got to win this game, right, Mark?
Well, I mean, it could end in a tie, a 0-0 tie. This is a depressing game. I'm one of four analysts that picked the Giants to go to the Super Bowl, but I'm the only one, unfortunately, that picked the Giants and the Chargers after this week. And
you're the only
that
one in
narrative.
This room, too. So that's
in this room as well. And I don't know. I mean, for me, the Chargers, to me, have looked desperate on offense. They have a lot of talent, but it's not a cohesive unit. I thought that the moment for them this season when Phillip Rivers – the mouthpiece comes out, and he's just jawing at the OC, Wisenhunt, at the sideline. He's super upset, and he should be. It's been the most frustrating season you could ever have scripted for Phillip Rivers, who did his best to – he's got the Rivers-mobile going up and down the West Coast, and it's gas mileage amounting to nothing so far.
Gas mileage.
They miss Mike McCoy.
That's the real tragedy here. All that mileage.
I mean –
They miss Mike McCoy. Or I don't know if it's just a coincidence because Ken Wisenhunt was there last year, and that was one of the reasons I like this Chargers offense. I thought, okay, there's continuity. But Mike McCoy is coming out the other end. I mean, Chargers fans, the one that have stuck with them moving from San Diego to L.A., have to be thinking like, oh, maybe that wasn't so bad. At least our offense was fun to watch. Now you're right. There's a lack of rhythm, a lot of miscommunication, a lot of not being on the same page.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot what I was going to say. I mean, it's probably better just to move on.
I have a personal question, though. Yeah. Do you ever get on the phone with with Charlie Casserly and Aditi Kinkawala and Judy Batista, whoever
else. Are we the four that – I know Charlie did.
I'm actually just making up the names who actually you guys just, like, talk about –
It's like a Survivor's,
your regrets.
It's not reached phone level. We have an online – a forum, a support forum for, you know, predictions that are beyond horrible that we're not – that people have not stopped reminding us.
Apologies to the other – you know, ladies.
Yeah, I think you put two people in there that maybe did not make this pick.
They're kind of they're in that, like.
They're women.
Well, they're in that.
Well,
group.
You know, Greg,
you step right into that trap.
You have painted yourself into a tough corner.
This is the week for Joey Bosa moving on to get right. He's been very
quiet. Is that how you save yourself, America? You just don't address it. You just change the subject. All right, I'll try that. I'll try that.
I have no need to because I believe I'm in good standing with Erica.
Let's move on. The Arizona Cardinals are 2-2 and kind of boring, and they're just another team. But some people support them, and we talk about every game. So we talk about the Cardinals traveling to Philadelphia.
I mean, they've got legend, you know, if nothing else, Larry Fitzgerald put a couple more memorable moments into his camp.
How about Larry Legend at the D-backs Rockies one-game playoff yesterday? They cut to him. It was like the seventh inning. It was 8-7. Fitzgerald all the way in, actually had the nerves. He looked like he had fan anxiety. He's just like my favorite player probably in the last 20 years. Larry Fitz. Never changed, buddy.
Who won that baseball playoff?
The Snakes advanced to the NLDS.
I don't need them going further into this.
Finally, one of the great rivalries in sport, Diamondbacks Rockies reunited again.
All right, here we go. Let's talk about this game. We'll start with you on this one, Greg. The Eagles, they're feisty. You're in on the Eagles, aren't you?
I am in. They were my preseason prediction, one of the onlys that that are turning out well so far to win this division. And one of the reasons why is because they're so good up front. I think their tackles right now, and it really struck me playing the Chargers, when you can shut down Ingram and Bosa for the most part, and you're getting big time space in the running game, you're doing something right. This is one of the best offensive lines in the league, and they push you around on both sides of the ball. I think this is going to be a tough spot here for the Cardinals.
I'm with you. I think we all saw what LeGarrette Blount did, and that feels like if that can continue, this is an incredibly balanced offense. It takes a lot of heat off Carson Wentz, a quarterback that was asked to do so much last year. Zach Ertz has been a big security blanket for him. And here's my issue, though, with the Cardinals. I really don't see. I actually think that Carson Palmer has been enjoyable to watch this season. You talked about Larry Fitzgerald. He is not going to last this season with the way he's getting hit. That game against the Niners, and this is what I was talking to before. The Niners, yeah, they didn't win the game, and people probably didn't even watch a thing. They battered him. They have so many issues along their offensive line. That's the wrong quarterback to be sitting back there. He is as immobile as anyone else out there.
Can you imagine how tough the Cardinals will be to watch if they lose Palmer and David Johnson?
They're a bad 2-2. They're very lucky to be 2-2. I think they're probably one of the worst five or six teams in the league right now, and then they're going up against a guy in Carson Wentz that I'm a little surprised, and maybe it's just they haven't been in national games, that he doesn't get a little more love from the average fan. Not that he's there yet as some great quarterback. I don't know if he's going
to
get there.
They need to have that big moment win that people were like, yeah, that's what we remember about Carson Wentz.
Because I don't know if he's going to get there. He's a little slow on the decision-making and accuracy. He reminds me a lot of a young Dante Culpepper or a young Cam or young Ben Roethlisberger. Just the athleticism and the plays he makes, he's just so much fun to watch. And I think this is a matchup where he's going to be especially fun to watch. At home, they're getting a little momentum. You got the tackles. The Cardinals are weak. Timmy Jernigan blowing up the spot. And that's why I'm locking it up.
Oh! Snuck up on me there. Like it. I like your pick.
He was heating up.
Yeah.
I can feel coming.
You
need
not
it.
As much as normal.
You need a big lockup, Greg. You're struggling badly this year. 1-3, I believe. So this is, I feel like, this
well,
is a good
I'm going
one.
Safe here. I think I've gotten underdogs.
It's a little safe.
I've gotten underdogs four straight weeks, and so that hasn't worked
Eagles
out.
Eagles win
well.
This by 10+. That's my prediction.
And let's keep an eye on Carson Wentz. He was even better through four games in his rookie year, and then the wheels kind of came off in the Eagles, who lost 8 of their last 12, and Wentz struggled. But we'll see. Will he make those gains and go to the next level?
This is a better offense around him. It's
right.
Got more balance. It's built to last this
He's
time.
Doing less. They're asking him to do less, which is a good thing.
Yes. Moving on, the Jacksonville Jaguars are 2-2 after – I mean, did you guys watch that Jets game?
Yes.
The Jaguars had no business losing that game. Once they McCown had the couple turnovers, the game was basically handed to Jacksonville on a platter. But, again, no one's – you know, I pick on the Titans, but The Jaguars are even worse. Like, you can't be taken seriously as a team until you find out a way to win those type of games, and they did not. So now they're 2-2, and now they got the Steelers. They're on the road against the Steelers, and Mark, you have a Steelers team that looked like they might have been getting on track against Baltimore last week on the road. I feel like maybe that explosion on offense is coming.
I think it is, because Le'Veon Bell looked great for moments of that Baltimore game, and I really love Pittsburgh's defense. We've talked about them before, but again, you were playing Flacco in a Ravens offense that's a tough, it's not exactly hard. It's hard to measure what you are if you're thriving against them, but Ryan Shazier is having an incredible season. You know, Wes and I were tweeting yesterday about this guy, Mike Hilton, who picked off Flacco as well off a tip pass. They have so much athleticism on that defense that I think that they... Everyone talks about Jacksonville's defense. Pittsburgh, I think, is got a better situation going on. I like the James Conner, that they're able to spell Le'Veon Bell with James Conner. He's looked actually pretty good. And it's just about, I think, the passing game is the thing that we're still waiting for the top to come off with Big Ben in the passing
keeps
game.
Missing. He keeps missing deep, but they're kind of back to their late season offense, which was just run it through Le'Veon Bell, and they are more balanced. It's a little tough to get a feel. They are dominating teams, but you tweeted about it yesterday. They haven't played a quarterback that's remote. I mean, if the Patriots had played this group of tomato cans, their defense would not be the worst in the league. The Steelers have not played anyone, but hey, guess what? It's continuing this week, so they should be fine.
On the Steelers side as well, and specifically their passing game, because I think nobody was really worried about Le'Veon Bell, even though he wasn't having Le'Veon Bell games, and then he had one last week. Roethlisberger's issues going downfield. So you addressed it there, Greg. 4 of 20. No touchdowns, one interception, 34.2 pass rating on passes of 20-plus air yards this season, according to NFL research. That same metric last year, those same details, he had 14 touchdowns and a 113.4 passer rating. So
I will say there have been drops. It's not all on him. It's not like they're stealing 20 yards over people's heads.
That's getting to my point. So it's either an issue of bad luck, of rust with Martavis Bryant, who's their primary deep man, or it could be a small sample size, and it's like, just let's wait this out a little bit. Or it could be the other thing, which is Big Ben's getting old.
Yeah,
and he's not the same guy anymore.
I don't think he's played as well since the start of last season than I'm used to. So maybe that's going to change back, but I think that it's been a fairly long sample size, and they're starting to play to it, which is interesting. Mm. They ran the ball on 3rd and 8 in a key spot last week, which I really was surprised to see the Steelers do that, and I think it's because they trust their defense now. I mean, Cameron Hayward, to me, has been one of the best defenders in the league, and they trust Le'Veon Bell, and that's like how they're built, old-school Steelers.
And what Greg mentioned, DeShone Kizer, Case Keenum, Mike Glennon, Joe Flacco, who's not Joe Flacco of old, and Blake Bortles. That's the first five quarterbacks.
Now, they have totally dominated.
They dominated.
Guys, and that's what you need to
all
do.
All these Steelers fans, like, you can't judge the schedule. I'm not. I'm just saying you've not faced a murderer's row of signal callers.
And Jaguars, if you want to show us something, go show it this week. I've heard some Jaguars fans saying, like, oh, we've got a top five defense, and we're waiting.
Got Jalen Ramsey, though. He looks good.
If I'm a Jaguars fan, I'm very worried about a Blake Bortles bloodbath. Good pass defense.
You're probably always worried about that.
But. I mean, Bortles has had a couple of moments, of course, the one game in London, which I'm going to mark down as an outlier. This guy, when he misses passes, I've never seen a guy whose incomplete passes are more errant than Blake Bortles. Mm. He's a special kind of bad, and I think it's going to come out big time at Heinz Field.
Speaking of a special kind of bad, I do want to correct, since you called me out for it, Loose Cannon.
Ooh, into the spider web.
The predictions were incorrect. You know, I named the wrong people. Ike Taylor, former Steeler, he had the Giants in the Super Bowl. And Maurice Jones-Drew also had the Giants in the Super Bowl. So those are two men.
Those two,
I don't mind Barry.
Yeah, and the two of them will appreciate you cycling back to call them out on a podcast that is listened to in about 38 countries.
Moving on.
Oh, more than that. We're in like Turks and Caicos. We're everywhere.
98 countries.
38 felt pretty good, though. I think it's closer to 38 than 98.
How many countries are there total?
I mean, at least for having a download 40? At some point. If you scroll through those lists, it goes on forever. I think it's over. It's in the hundreds.
1 million countries strong, the Around the NFL podcast. How about that?
I don't know if there are hundreds of countries. I'm going to look this up while you can go.
Yeah, Google. How many countries?
It's funny to hear you guys talk about countries.
All right. You know what?
It's true, though.
All right. Here's a good
one. We're openly academically dumb. We've always maintained that. There's no pride there. 195 countries. So I was right. They're not hundreds and hundreds. There's 100 plus.
I think we've been heard in over 100 territories. How much time do we have left on the show?
Just
all right, five more
enough,
minutes.
Enough. Okay, all right, sorry. Let's talk the Seahawks at the Rams. The Seahawks seem to get healthy against the Colts in primetime, as we all expected them to. It just took them two quarters to get the engine revving, but when it did, it was a 46-18 laugher. And now they face a team that's been the biggest surprise in the league this year, I think, the Rams. The And they are the team of ATL. And if some people talk about it, they used to say the SI curse, and then they said the Madden curse, and that all feels passe now. Now I think the real buzzy thing is the team of ATL curse. So we're going to see right away here, Greg, if the Rams can handle the pressure of being the team of ATL.
Oh, that's a team of ATL. That's a silly theory, because the first team of ATL had a terrific season, the Carolina Panthers.
You could cite those things with the Madden curse and the SI curse.
But that's too, like the first example of it. So
last
it was
year's
gonna
team started 5-0 and then literally had a nuclear
since
bomb
then,
laying on them.
Since
so
that first season, not as great. You know, the Cardinals were rolling along till that old torn ACL by Carson Palmer.
Mark's not exaggerating either. The 2006 Vikings had a nuclear bomb dropped on their facility
just minutes after we anointed them.
That was
tragic, really
problematic. As is this matchup.
Kind of buried in the news a little bit.
A little bit.
For I don't just look at this Rams team and think they're a juggernaut. Each one of these games have been tight, and this is a tough matchup.
Nice.
And it's the one matchup, the one coach in the NFL that is thrilled to see Sean McVay on the other sideline instead of Jeff Fisher. Pete Carroll couldn't beat Jeff Fisher for three straight years. Five out of six times Jeff Fisher took out Pete Carroll and the Seahawks. So this is a matchup. Obviously, these teams are totally different, but I do think it's a big NFC West game, and if the Rams can win it, it's like you get some separation. I think Seattle comes down here knowing that, knowing this is a big game, that they want to stay right there and not dig a big hole in the division.
Well, we just did our NFL Network here where we talked about 2-2 teams that we are on board with, that we trust to bounce back and keep going, and I picked Seattle, but if you lose to this game, I don't know what you hang your hat on if you're the Seahawks, because this is the if you're going to, you know, go on to the playoffs, you need to take care of this thing. And I look at the Rams front seven, and they're I think it's starting to come around under Wade Phillips. I don't think that there's some players that were not maybe the most natural fit for his 3-4, but how about Lael Collins getting dominated last week? Michael Brocker's making plays.
Brocker's
Alec Ogletree starting to make plays from that inside linebacker position. So I don't know if they can take what they did in the second half against Dallas defensively and translate it against a terrible offensive line with Seattle. This could be an interesting matchup for the Rams.
Let's pick this game.
I need to see a little something out of Robert Quinn. I was expecting a lot this year, and this is a week to do it. I'm going to pick the Rams at home. I just think I don't feel like it's a lot. That's a lot.
No, before the show, I was like, Erica, what we want to do with that shortened team of ATL drop, we want to kind of sprinkle it in once or twice a week, maybe once a show, but that doesn't have to be. We've been like 14 of them.
Erica, who is clearly, we are having ill chemistry with her today based on stuff that may not be our fault.
We're not Cam Newton, Erica. Yeah. Don't
I mean,
look at us
she
like
has
that.
Gone totally guerrilla warfare on us. I am going Rams. And I'll tell you why, because I think Todd Gurley looks the best running back in the NFC right now as not just a runner, but as a receiver. Teams can now not just sit there and wait for Jeff Fisher to have the ball handed off to Gurley three times in a row. You have to deal with the passing game. There's a lot of new elements here, and Gurley has been fascinating to watch.
Rams are a game plan.
Now, gotta move on to the like, next.
It's catchy.
It's now like Carrie Underwood.
Yeah, it's kind of bit stealing now.
It's now Carrie Underwood. This is a team. I'm impressed how they can be a game plan team that changes things up so much from week to week when it's such a new team. But last week they really used tempo in an effective way, like speeding up, slowing down, speeding up, slowing down. One week they'll go to their wide receivers. The other week everything's up the middle to their two young tight ends and Cooper Kupp. You don't know what you're gonna get with this Rams team. What a coaching job.
You can run on the Seahawks team.
I have a bit of a Sessler that.
This means it'll be incorrect, by the way.
The Legion of Boom is going to show up in this game, and Jared Goff's going to come down to earth a little bit.
I mean, what's the point of having a team of ATL if you don't believe in them and just pick them blindly?
It doesn't mean that you think they're going to go 15-1.
Hey, here's a
I think it could be a bump in the road. It doesn't mean that they're shot.
I guess I figure we don't know what's going to happen, so you might as well just pick them.
I'll do what I want. You do what you want. That's how the world works. That's how America works. That's what makes us the best damn country in the world. Moving on, the Baltimore Ravens travel to Oakland to face the Raiders. The Raiders will not have Derek Carr, of course, who has a transverse fracture of his lower back, which is going to sideline him for a couple weeks, at least 1 week. So a huge break for the Ravens, who now are trying to figure out how to get their season back on track. It's not going to be easy in Oakland, Mark, but having a chance to face a Raiders team that is vulnerable without their number one quarterback, this should be a game they should hang in and possibly take outright.
I don't know. You take the Browns out of the equation, and these might be, over the last 2 weeks, the two worst offenses in the NFL.
Wow.
With Derek Carr. Are you kidding me? What
well,
did they do?
In terms of production.
Well, he was great the first 2 weeks.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Last 2 weeks,
yeah.
They can't run the ball. Your star receivers have barely – one literally was hurt, so I get that. Amari Cooper drops all over the place.
In Dan's parlance.
Two cats.
Now she's off the reservation.
Going to drug test you soon. That's coming soon.
What were you saying? In my parlance?
I really like that team of ATL just came in there. Really cracked me up.
But, I mean, maybe the Ravens
offense. I was
going
to say, come back to us. Come back to us, Amari Cooper. You're the last-ranked wide receiver in Pro Football Focus. You have a miscommunication or a drop every week. What's going on?
It's a great
come
question.
Come back to us.
We're getting
that's
E.J. Manuel and a Joe Flacco who looks like one-eighth of Joe. What's going on with Joe Flacco? Not healthy?
One-eighth, did you say?
One-eighth of the Joe Flacco that we've seen at his height when he had that amazing January run.
12.5% of Joe Flacco.
That's what we're getting right now. They have zero downfield passing game. The only thing they have that I see on offense is Alex Collins, which they, you know, they picked up off the street.
Are you calling him a fluco?
Are you?
Pretty fluco at this point.
E.J. Manuel, everybody's excited about E.J. Manuel all of a sudden.
Who
I'm
is?
Seeing all corners on Twitter, all the white knights out there. Oh, E.J. Manuel, he's a great backup. This guy is a... They're in great position.
Wait, I've missed this
It's
move.
Out there in the ether, the football cognoscente.
Well, the cognoscente.
He came in and he moved the ball better than...
Oh, yeah, it's you.
He did.
You were going nuts on Sunday about E.J. Manuel. It's like, why won't they let E.J. Manuel live? What? I know E.J. Manuel.
Verbal subtweet.
No, I was forgetting who it was.
I didn't
but it was Greg.
Yeah, I didn't see
you were excited about E.J. Manuel.
This wasn't a group
Sunday.
I wasn't. I said he played well for a quarter. I certainly wouldn't.
Do you want me to call up your Twitter? Because I'll find the tweet.
Well, now you have a week to prepare
for
E.J. Manuel.
On Twitter, yeah, that's true. I said he was doing legendary things and his receivers were letting him down. That was true.
This Ravens defense, I know what happened in England, but this is not a bad defense. I think it's just that they're on the field way too much right
now. Yeah, but they're on the field because they can't get off the field. Like, the Ravens offense has been bad, but get off the field, Ravens defense, in the first half of a game. The Steelers started last week with a 10-minute drive that had 10 or 11 runs. Like, this is not a tough Ravens defense. The Steelers pushed them around. The Jaguars pushed them around. There's not a lot of pass rush. Not enough juice. Show me something.
All right, let's move on. This is the 425 Fox game, so I think you're going to get a little Joe and Troy in the evening. Packers at Cowboys. Love this matchup. One of my favorite rivalries. And guess what? Rematch of a playoff game from last year. The best playoff game. I didn't think Super Bowl 51 was the best playoff game. I thought it was Packers beating the Cowboys in Big D.
Very
love
hip. It's very
really.
That's very hipster of you.
Yeah. Yes.
The 25 point comeback in the Super Bowl. Nah.
Snore.
First overtime in the Super Bowl.
Hard pass. This was the game. But anyway, now we get a chance to see how the
incredible
Cowboys
game.
React here, Greg, because they let one get away last week.
They did, and you could say that they let one get away last season. Dak Prescott, before Tom Brady ever did it, had an incredible fourth quarter comeback to put this team back in position. It really put it over the top with me in terms of Dak Prescott, the way he handled that. This year hasn't been as easy for him, and that's partly because of Dez Bryant. They really can't stretch the field. Dez Bryant, 16 catches on 40 targets, and this is the reason the Packers drafted Kevin King, was because Dez dragged the Packers secondary up and down the field in that playoff game. I kind of can't see Dez doing that. Prove me wrong. Maybe he can do it.
I'm with you. I mean, for me, every week this season, I don't see the same offensive line from last year.
That too.
Dak is getting pressured. I think the run game is not as automatic as it was, although I do think that Zeke Elliott is running as well as we've seen all season. Last week, he looked good. It's just that you can't grind out these 10-minute drives with this offense right now.
I think the Cowboys aren't there yet. I think they might be getting there. It might take some time, but I think they're getting the Packers at the right time here. Davante Adams, who got just drilled by Danny Trevathan, leading to that suspension. We're taping this on Thursday afternoon, limited in practice.
He might play,
but also do not consider it a surprise if you don't see him. And then Ty Montgomery, that's a big deal. So he's their starting running back. He has multiple fractured ribs, and it's like, oh, he's practicing. We might see him. Yeah, but you're going to actually take hits as a running back with
broken
ribs?
Baby. You know, the one you got, you mentioned Sean Lee. He did not practice on Thursday either. That's a concern.
This defense is totally different without Sean Lee. And the Packers, it sounds at this point, are going to get back, or at least they're optimistic. Brian Bulaga and David Bakhtiari, they're two great tackles. I loved what I saw out of Rodgers last week. It was a very mature game, kind of letting the game come to him, that he's not trying to do too much in with less people around him. I think he played really fantastic. I want to see if that's a way to keep get going, like, and just outsmart other teams like the Cowboys.
I liked how you put it, Greg, in your QB index, that it was almost like, you didn't put this, but I'll kind of what your sentiment
paraphrase
was. It was like a Porsche-type version of a game manager game by Aaron Rodgers, or like a Ferrari game manager.
Exactly.
Or whatever is a fancy car. I'm not a car guy. I can get under a hood and pop a couple lug nuts and get some things fixed.
Really?
And then send it back on the road. You need an oil change? I'll take care of that. Pop the hood. Get me under there. Get me under the old muffler. I can do that too. But
you don't have like car calendars around your house though.
Sometimes, you know, Rodgers, he tries to be a little too fancy. This time he's got two hands on the wheel, and then every once in a while when he really needs to rev it up, he does it.
10-2.
The ref, all right, Mark. So I know you use a automatic transmission, manual transmission. You could rev it, bang, bang it, and then you could really take off in your car on those four wheels. Every car has got four wheels.
I mean, I'll say this: if you're not a car guy, I don't know what category that puts me in.
Or a car girl. I'm
not going to call myself a car girl. I'm a car person. I'm not a car person.
This is not a
I'm
group.
Taking no possession over anything.
I spell woman with a Y, by the way. That's Erica knows I'm on her side.
Are you into cars, Erica?
No.
Okay. This is not a group of car people.
No,
I mean, Wes didn't even have one.
Wes at one point.
What else
Wes
did he
at one
hear
point,
from me?
He had people coming up. He was trying to sell his car. He gave his car away. Yeah. For like $180 to someone.
Well, he gave it to him and said, "Yeah, pay me when I get back." Never saw the guy again.
That was Wes.
I mean, it was a jalopy.
That was like old Irish. We called it. It was like a 1937 Toyota Camry, but
had like cats in the back seat.
No, like Wes. I think he had been on the island too long because he got to L.A. and he had this piece of shit car, and then he found a man that would take the car off his hands, and. Yeah, he said, can we get like some money for it? And the guy's like, I think the guy offered Wes money. And Wes is like, I'm going home. Hit me up when I get back. And he just never heard from the guy again. Well, I mean, you know, a little hard knocks lesson there for the mailman in retrospect.
I mean,
we miss you, Wes.
Yeah, go easy on the poor guy. You're just burying him in a big side. No, I'm kidding.
It's just one of my favorite Wes stories. Wes knows that.
That car was worth about $84. So.
True. Basically, yeah, it was an incident that cost him probably $214. Let's move on and talk about Sunday Night Football. The Kansas City Chiefs 4-0 and coming off of that 29-20 win on Monday night against the Redskins. Now travel to Houston, and this is an excellent game. Sometimes the Sunday Night Football scheduling gods, it works out perfectly.
It's like this is paying them back for Jacoby Brissett, is you get Deshaun Watson at this time and place.
You get him exactly when his star moment, when he's just kind of bursting into the national view. And this is a huge game for the Texans to me because we just talked about this on our NFL Network hit earlier today. I am of the opinion that the Texans, all they've ever been looking for, they've had all these other pieces, and I like their head coach. They've always needed a quarterback, and it very much looks like now they have an answer at quarterback and a difference maker at quarterback. If he comes out in primetime on Sunday night and whips up on a very good Chiefs defense, ranked second in the league and making big plays every week, then you know you're for certain that there's something very special going on down in Houston.
Absolutely. And who would have thought late August that we would be looking in week 5 at one of the best quarterback matchups of the year between Alex Smith and Deshaun Watson. And I, you know what? Alex Smith does belong in that claim, because what I saw him do on Monday night, and you just said about it with a game manager type guy who does something much more, whatever the car reference was. You lost me with all the cars.
Ferrari game manager.
Alex game manager Smith, with a couple extra little pops.
Alex Smith was that and more on Monday night. He really was. And this is another guy that has so many parts around him. And with the Texans, this is the first time with Bill O'Brien. Week 1, 7 points. Week 2, 13. And that's when we started. Then the switch flipped.
Which was Watson.
Was Watson. But then the jump. 33 points the next week. 57. You always had to plan around the quarterback when you were Bill O'Brien. Terrible quarterback play. How do you mask it? With the defense and whatever you can get out of DeAndre Hopkins and fill in the blank signal caller. Now, teams have to look at Deshaun Watson and say, how do we deal with that and everything else they're bringing?
Well, teams are going to start to adjust. I don't think it'll necessarily happen this week. They'll come up with ways to bug Watson. But the thing that I love watching them is he helps their running game so much. And maybe O'Brien underrated that when he chose Tom Savage as the week one starter. Not just Watson's ability to run, but the threat of him running and how they're using him in play action and in option routes. And suddenly this Texans offense doesn't look so thin. Like, suddenly the offensive line looks okay when Deshaun Watson's out there. Now Will Fuller's back. I thought he was a big addition last week. I thought he looked better last week than he really did during his rookie season. Suddenly you get Dante Foreman in the mix along with Lamar Miller, and it's like you got some pieces here. It's not just one guy.
It will be a great challenge. You got Marcus Peters in the secondary for Kansas City. I finally think we're getting a primetime game that I really get revved up for.
Houston's performance against Tennessee, they scored 5 straight times to start the game. And it's funny because when Watson first entered the fray way back in week 2 now, he looked very much like a rookie, and they still won the game, but you could tell he was not comfortable.
Yeah, they won it because of him too. But
yeah, he made a big play at the end of the game. But the difference between him 3 weeks ago and now, the guy looked like he was in total control.
Right.
And it's just, I think it's something special that we're watching.
You mentioned the first half. The most impressive drive for me was right after halftime. He did one of those game manager, take what the defense gives you. They basically decided after he ripped them to shreds in the first half, let's back off, let's make this rookie work his way down the field, see if he makes a mistake, keep everything in front of us. And you know what he did? He just patiently, kind of calmly looked through his receivers, did 11-play, 12-play drive, got the touchdown that way too. And I was just like, wow, this kid, he's mature.
He's comfortable in the pocket. He sells different. He's able to sell the handoffs and the flips, that Lamar Miller touchdown. He just looks so comfortable as a pro quarterback. So who you guys got in this game, by the way?
I'm going to take the Texans at home. I feel like the Chiefs are just due for a loss.
I'm going to go Chiefs, but that's not a knock on the Houston Texans. I think that's going to be a really, really good game.
Yeah, I got Houston in that. All right, lastly, Minnesota and Chicago, Monday Night Football. And this one wasn't shaping up too hot, let's face it, a week ago. But now we're going to get Mitch Trubisky, Greg Rosenthal, making his NFL debut, Mike Lennon to the bench for the Bears, which adds a lot of intrigue to this game. Your thoughts?
Going back to his preseason, I watched a little of it again, checked out what I wrote, and it was a lot of what I just said about Deshaun Watson, that Trubisky looks so comfortable in the games. He had a natural rhythm, like an anticipation. Like Jay Cutler, you still don't see him anticipate routes. Trubisky was throwing it before guys made their break. Like, he just looked like he was made to play football, and so accurate, moves well, should help the running game. It got me wondering, like, we should stop having opinions on things in the NFL draft. What do I know about Mitch Trubisky? I still don't know, but I shouldn't be slamming them for giving up a lot to trade up for number 2, because if he's a franchise quarterback, they haven't really had one in, 40 years.
It wasn't just you. It was everyone really had fun at the Bears' expense of that pick, and it's so funny because
partly because of Glennon, and they weren't planning for that all to happen in order. They would obviously take back.
Yeah, partly because of Glennon, but also everybody basically saying, "Oh, what a reach!" and all this. Like, nobody knows, and we're not even going to start to find out until Monday, which is like 6 months later. So whatever, everybody.
To Greg's point, it's been 4,299 days on Monday night since the Bears started a rookie quarterback who was Kyle Orton way back in 2006. They don't draft quarterbacks. They don't really develop guys. They've always done this sort of sign the Mike Glennon type figure over and over. And if you talk to Bears fans down in our newsroom, you know, they'll Adam Rank, for instance,
of which
has
there
his,
are many.
There are a bunch, but yeah. Adam Rank has his top five Bears quarterbacks.
Kyle Orton was good for that team, by the way.
He was okay, but he doesn't even go to five. It only goes to three, and Trubisky's already on the list, if I'm not mistaken. So at least this turns what would have been a horrible. It's depressing when Monday Night Football has a crap matchup. And you can try to shine it up and say it's great. Look at me, I'm a league guy. But like, no, honestly, some of these games.
What is the subtweeting going on here? Look at me, I'm a league guy. Yeah. Shine it up, I'm great. I mean,
that was definitely.
That's what our entire network must do is act like.
But that was toward Greg.
It is not towards Greg.
I mean, if you're gonna just say it, just say it.
I don't think you would have liked. Would you like this game if Mike Glennon were starting?
No,
he would have goosebumps.
All right.
I'm also hoping
Mike Glennon made it unwatchable. Now it's exciting.
I'm hoping Case Keenum, who has played really well. I thought he played really well against.
I don't know if he played really well against the Lions.
I do. I think he played well. Three drives ended with fumbles from his teammates, and a couple others did.
Was
drop.
He not totally out of sync down the stretch on the
his
the
right
last
tackle let him down too? I'll tell you what, at the end of that game, he didn't even give him a chance when he took that sack on third down.
I'm just saying, a quarterback playing really well in the NFL. That's not what I saw
seven
from Case Keenan in the
points.
Fourth quarter against the Lions, but he did fine.
I guess my point is he's played well, but we still need a little Sammy Bradford.
I think
it sounds like he might be back.
Yeah,
for this
maybe
yeah.
We'll be back. That'd I guess it did. We were doing our pick'em segment. We were shooting it at the cornhole boards yesterday, and Greg was getting all excited about Case Keenum on the road in primetime, and I was just shocked to hear it. But
I think he's played well, and I give credit to Pat Shurmur, not a guy who's gotten a lot of love on this podcast, because guys are open. He's throwing the ball down the field. I really did think it was his teammates all around that let him down. Three fumbles, a couple drops, right tackle, all that. And their defense is playing really well. This is not an easy matchup for Trubisky.
Yeah,
the secondary is a tough matchup. Everson Griffin's playing fantastic for Minnesota.
All right, so there you go. That is the Week 5 preview. Next time you hear from us, it will be on Sunday night, our flagship program, where we'll break down all these games we just previewed. But it won't be your last chance to see us. That's called a transition in the business, in show business.
Until you start to explain that it was a transition,
right.
It starts
we've been,
to lose
we've
some
been through this,
just,
Dan,
just
before.
A bit.
Welcome to show business, folks.
All right.
Rich Eisen's never like, what about that?
There we go.
NFL Pick'em, which is the NFL Network program that we are a part of, airs 9 a.m., 11 a.m., and 2 p.m. on Saturday, all Eastern Standard Time, and Sunday at 6 a.m. Eastern, which, of course, leads into game day morning with our good friend, Connie Fox. So make sure you check that out. Let's get out of here. Let's go. Let's talk to Erica. We got to talk some things out with Erica. Clear the air. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, The Boss, and the 2017 Podcast Woman of the Year, Erica Tamposi. Till Sunday!